Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 33 of Dogcast Radio. It's 2007, and we're looking forward to another year enjoying sharing anything and everything dog-related with you. In today's episode, we have a profile of a very popular breed, the German Shepherd Dog.
Many people find them to be their epitome of the ideal dog to have if they want something that is loyal and intelligent and protective, sort of the hallmark characteristics the breed is known for.
In Puppy Playtime, Jenny reads part of the story of Faith, the two-legged dog.
She isn't normal, she isn't average, she isn't anything short of a real living miracle that God decided I needed.
And in the news, we ask a question with a surprising answer.
How big a dog do you think could manage to go unnoticed in your average airport?
Oh, Chihuahua? Jack Russell? Maybe a Cocker Spaniel?
But before all that, we have an interview with Karen Shirk. Karen founded Four Paws for Ability, an organisation that supplies assistance dogs, mainly for children. Four Paws has a revolutionary approach, and where other organisations consider certain people too young or even too ill for a dog, Four Paws can help. When you hear from Karen in a minute about the amazing behaviours these dogs can carry out, I know you'll be as touched as I was. I came across the website in connection with an appeal to raise money for a young autistic boy to have an assistance dog. I was intrigued, and the first thing Karen and I talked about was that the biggest request for dogs that will work with autistic children is that they are trained to track.
Children with autism tend to wander away. A lot of times the parents call us and they have 3 locks on every door and window in their house and their child still gets out. Scales the privacy fence and takes off. And, you know, these are kids that aren't aware of traffic and strangers. And so every minute that they're gone, it's life-threatening. So when we train the dog in tracking, it's like the family having their own little search and rescue team available at all times. Mm. If they look up and their child's missing, they get their dog and their dog would follow the scent straight to the child. Mm. So, because, you know, the dog doesn't have to see where the child went to find them. And then, in addition to that, for these children that wander away, a lot of times the parents become homebound because they're so afraid their child will take off from them in public. Or not, you know, they have to strap them in a wheelchair and then they're not happy or they have to have a death grip on them at all times. When we place the dog and the child both wear a harness and they're tethered together. So basically, the parent walks the dog walks out in front of them, and the child walks next to the dog and they're tethered together. So if the child does try to bolt off, like toward the road, they can't because they're attached to the dog.
Mm, yeah.
So when a family told us recently that they were coming out of the grocery store and their child was tethered to the dog, and the child saw the car in the parking lot and started to bolt, and there was a car coming really fast down the road, down the little shopping center road, and the dog just kind of set himself to not budge, you know. And when the child hit the end of the leash, the dog didn't budge, and the child was missed, you know, the car missed the child by inches.
Yeah.
And went by. That child would have been hit by the car if he hadn't been tethered to the dog.
So these dogs, they must give a tremendous peace of mind to the parents of these children.
Absolutely. And then in addition to that, we have what we call behavior disruption. With behavior disruption, the parent has commands that they can send the dog in to interact with their child. So if the child is self-stimming, like children with autism might flap their hands or spin an object or walk in circles, just lots of different things that's kind of stimulating for them, then they can send the dog in to touch the child. And when the dog touches the child, it interrupts their thought pattern.
Yeah.
So that hopefully what they will then do is interact with the dog instead of continuing to self-stim. And then, in addition to that, they have another command to send the dog in to snuggle with the child. So if they're looking and their child is seeming to be frustrated, a lot of these children will go into full-fledged meltdowns where they just are inconsolable and maybe aggressive if you try to go in and intervene. But that's because when the parent comes to the child knows the parent has an agenda. So a lot of times the parent can send the dog in to snuggle into the child's lap, and it will defer a meltdown from occurring because the children, just like us, know that the dogs are safe. The dogs don't want them to do anything they don't want to do. They just want to, you know, lay beside them and love them. Or a lot of our kids with higher functioning autism, like Asperger's, the behavior disruption makes a huge difference. One parent told us that every time her child starts to get frustrated, now the dog goes over and licks his face and he starts laughing.
Aww.
Whereas before he would have been screaming and yelling and having a tantrum. So that's pretty much the things that we train, and not every child needs all of those. So we talk to the parent, we determine what exactly we can do to help that parent and that child, and we train the dog to do those things. In addition to all that, our autism program has to be a very specific temperament, because they have to be able to, you know, sometimes autistic children are impulsive and they might poke the dog or pull the dog's tail or grab their hair or something. So it has to be a dog that's tolerant. And also the children, a lot of times they make high-pitched screams or they have very strange movements or behaviors that might scare some dogs. So we have to be very careful about the dogs that we choose. And I would say only 50% of the dogs that we take in thinking that they can be an autism dog actually graduate.
Mm-hmm. And when you say the dogs that you take in, are you talking about puppies there or rescues? Where do you find your dogs?
We take 85 to 90% of our dogs right now come from shelters and rescue groups. We try to get them as puppies because we raise all of our dogs as if they would go to an autistic child, so that we're kind of preparing them through their whole life for being in that type of situation. But we also do take dogs that are young, ready for training, like 9 to 18 months. And those dogs have to pass a very intensive evaluation,
mm-hmm.
so that we know that that we can use them, if we're using them for, you know, basically every dog that we take in, we consider for autism, and the ones that aren't going to make good autism dogs, we look at the other types of dogs that we train, because just because a dog wouldn't be tolerant of an autistic child doesn't mean they can't be a mobility assistance dog for an 11-year-old who is cognitively typical. You know, and then any dogs that we don't think will make good service dogs, we place into pet homes. But 85% of the dogs come from rescues and shelter groups. The others come from individuals. Maybe they got the dog and they can't keep the dog, or they got a puppy and they didn't realize how much work the dog would be, or we accept donations from responsible breeders. And we do have a few dogs in a breeding program for the future, because as we grow, we're just not able to find enough for the very disabled children, like children that have multiple disabilities and may just lay on the floor the majority of the day. We need a very specific, laid-back, calm dog that will just lay with the child all day, and people don't typically take those dogs to shelters.
No.
So we have and we also need dogs that are hypoallergenic for families with allergies. So we do have a small breeding program in addition to, but the majority of our dogs have been rescued.
One of the things that I really liked about your philosophy is apparently a lot of other suppliers of assistance dogs will say, we won't supply to children. And also, which horrified me, they won't supply if you've already got a dog, will they?
No. Most agencies will not place a dog into a home with any kind of pet besides maybe fish. And we feel that if a dog is well-trained, the dog should work regardless of the situation. we let families know that there's extra work in having another dog in the home already to make sure that the dog doesn't bond first to that dog and not the child, you know, and things like that. But it's not an impossible thing, and 90% of the families we have dogs with have other pets in their home, and there's no difference in the quality of work that's performed between the dog that's in a home by themselves and the dog that's in a home with pet dogs. As long as the dog is well trained and teaches the family how to maintain that training in spite of a pet dog that may not, you know, have any manners at all, then it's absolutely possible to make a successful placement. And, you know, our agency, we believe that the dogs should be members of the family. So we're not going, and we want to promote the fact that people shouldn't be looking at dogs as commodities. If it's no longer convenient, you get rid of your dog. Well, we would be promoting that concept if we told our families they had to get rid of their pet dogs to get one of our dogs.
Absolutely.
So we don't do that. And we also don't turn people away just because they may be more severely disabled, or their disability may not be as severe as somebody else's, because I think a lot of agencies have those requirements because they have such long waiting lists. But because our families fundraise, we can train as many dogs as we have families fundraising. So we don't have to develop a long waiting list. And even if we did, I wouldn't start making restrictions so that we whittle it down. I don't think that it's right. I don't think that anybody has the right to say, oh, I don't think you're disabled enough. That happened to me, which is why I started Four Paws.
Yeah.
Actually, they told me that I was too disabled to benefit from a service dog.
Gosh. Because, I mean, obviously I read your story and Ben's story on your site, and that is tremendously moving. And I mean, I realize I'm asking you to tell a lot here, but, I mean, could you tell us Ben's story?
Well, when I became disabled, I became disabled very severely, very fast. So I was getting a master's degree in college, and the next thing I know, I'm in intensive care, ventilator dependent most of the time. And when I was at home, I had to have aides and nurses and a ventilator and central lines and all that type of thing just to survive. A friend of mine suggested service dogs, and we looked into what they could do mobility-wise, and I started applying to agencies. Well, every agency I applied to turned me down because I used a ventilator at night to breathe. And finally, one agency accepted me, and I waited for 18 months on a waiting list, and they called and said they had a dog for me, and then they sent the trainer down, and the next thing I know, I got a letter that said, oh, we didn't know you used a ventilator at night. We can't place a dog with you. And that's when I was so depressed, and we went and we looked at these German Shepherds, and that's when I got Ben, who was the most amazing dog to walk the face of the earth, in my opinion. And, of course, the other people's. He's been in newspapers all the way across the United States and honored by many different organizations for his work. But basically, I got Ben, and then I worked with him, and I trained with him, and then we went to National Canine, which is a place that trains dog trainers, and one of the trainers there, who actually is now our training director, worked with Ben, and Ben became a phenomenal service dog, and one time after I had open heart surgery, the morphine pump that I had and the medication that I was on conflicted, and I went into a coma, a drug-induced coma, at home. And when my dad called, Ben actually knocked the phone off the hook and barked and barked and barked and barked. And my dad lived too far away, so when the police got there, he was still barking at the phone.
Yeah.
So he was a phenomenal dog. Unfortunately, I lost him to a neuromuscular disease when he was 8 years old, so... But he's the reason that Four Paws exists today.
Yeah.
You know, he did so much for me, and I kept thinking, what about all these other people that are being turned down by these agencies, and they should have a dog like Ben? And when I started the agency and the word got out that we would place dogs with children, that became our specialty because there were so few.
Yeah.
And even those few that exist would only place dogs with, like, the most high-functioning children. You know, they're very selective of what children they will place dogs with, and we're not at all.
Yeah.
So as long as it's safe, we're not going to turn the child down. You know, obviously a child who bites and won't let go and doesn't understand what that biting means, a dog is going to bite back if somebody's clamped down on them and won't let go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how well-trained the dog is, if a child bites a dog and is biting them and not letting go, the dog is going to defend itself. So it has to be safe. But, you know, those parents whose children they know are not safe with dogs don't contact us. So we rarely have to turn anybody down. Those parents that have children like that know not to apply at that time. We receive pretty much an application every day, and I turn down maybe 3 or 4 people a year.
That's tremendous. So,
and not with an easy time either, turning them down, because I know what it feels like.
Yeah. I came across your website, and as I say, I was so impressed with your attitude and your philosophy, and as well touched by your story with Ben, and I just thought people need to know about this and the marvelous work you're doing.
Well, thank you. And we hope we're in the process of going international. We actually have 3 dogs that are going to New Zealand.
Oh wow!
So, and we I know you're in England, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, we get emails from England all the time. You know, we would love to see our services go to overseas, and we do have interns that are coming also from Australia to learn how to train the autism dogs so that they'll be able to train dogs for kids in Australia. And maybe somebody from England will come and learn how to do it and take it to England.
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah, because autism is not something that's confined to any one country, that's for sure.
Karen says on her site that every time a dog leaves the centre, her dog Ben is honoured. Karen is training dogs that make a fundamental difference to the lives they touch, not just to the disability sufferer, but to the whole family. Karen's policies are also helping to stop unnecessary suffering of both people and dogs. Karen has been given the honour of being one of the top 5 heroes for the state of Ohio in the Volvo for Life Awards. If Karen wins this award, Four Paws for Ability will receive $25,000, and you can help make sure that happens by visiting www.volvoforlifeawards.org and voting for Karen Shirk. You can help Karen to keep on making a difference. So if her story and her work has touched you, please take the time to vote for her. There are links on the Dogcast site, to the Volvo site, and also to the Four Paws site. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
And now for our younger listeners, it's Puppy Playtime! Hi and welcome to Puppy Playtime. In episode 31, we had an interview with Jude Stringfellow, whose dog is the amazing two-legged Faith. Jude has written a book about the experiences of her and her family and sent this introduction from her book to share with the Puppy Playtime listeners. Introduction. I have told this story over and over again whenever I am in the store talking with someone who may recognise me from being on a television show or in a newspaper or magazine with my dog, Faith. Seemingly, the story begins, it has a middle, and usually, all too often, it has a quick ending as I am checking out and have to run. This time, I get the opportunity to sit down and explain to everyone the miracle that is my dog, Faith. She isn't normal, she isn't average, she isn't anything short of a real living miracle that God decided I needed. He was right. At the time Faith came into my life, our lives, we were just getting over a terrible situation, and there was hurt and a heartache still lingering around our daily lives. We were sad at times, happy at times, but always wondering if we were going to be a healed family or if we would just try to make do with what we had. So many families face this situation. It's hard to start a new routine or try to put away sad things that are happening in your life. It's difficult to try and find time to change what is hurting in your life in order to make your family get along. So often teenagers don't want to talk to their parents about what is hurting them. It's hard for parents to stop what they are doing because they have to work or have to pay bills. We didn't want to end up in a sad family. We had to find a way to help ourselves. And for us, that meant taking care of Faith. We did take care of Faith, and she took care of us. In the past nearly four years, that we've had our darling little dog, she has become not only an international celebrity, but a great friend to us personally. Just to think, it just took a little faith. If you would like to read more, there's a link on the Dogcast website. Till next time, have fun with your dog and make sure your dog has fun with you.
The German Shepherd Dog has an outstanding reputation for loyalty, intelligence and trainability. Just what is it about the breed that makes it so popular? To find out just that, I spoke to Robin Winter from Narnia Kennels.
Well, I think that they are a breed that has been used for many, many different purposes. And they have such high versatility that many people find them to be their epitome of the ideal dog to have if they want something that is loyal and intelligent and protective, sort of the hallmark characteristics the breed is known for.
As you say, they are very versatile. They can, I was going to say turn a hand, but I'll change that, turn a paw, to so many different activities and roles, can't they?
They can. That's one of the joys of owning a German Shepherd is so many different abilities or talents that's wrapped up in one dog. And the interesting thing is exploring what you can all do with your dog and what the dog's all capable of doing.
It's an intelligent breed, isn't it?
It's a very intelligent breed. They are ranked as one of the top of the most intelligent. And along with intelligence, you have the high desire to please people and to work with man.
What kind of activities, you know, I'm thinking of obviously obedience, but sort of what are the activities, training activities, are a good release for this dog, both sort of mentally and physically?
Anything that's going to make the dog think and is going to tax them physically works well to, you know, to be a good activity to do with your dog. So sort of the usual activities people might do with a German Shepherd would be tracking, obedience, agility. Some people do fly ball. There's different variants on your obedience, like your rallyo and things like that. As well, there's your more involved sports that are like Schutzhund, where you're going to be training the dog in both tracking, obedience, and protection work. And some people, you know, develop their own version of a sport by, you know, doing mountain hiking with their dog, and the dog backpacks beside them. So the dogs are, you know, they have so many different things they can go into and that they can be good at.
What kind of exercise requirement do they have?
German Shepherds are a high-energy breed. I would say that's fairly consistent right across the whole breed. That means they do need a large garden to live in with a house. They shouldn't be an apartment dog. And they do need at least, you know, 2 to 3 times a week, a good long run where they're going to really stretch their muscles and really run full out. A walk around the block is not sufficient for this breed most of the time.
And what about company? Sort of, do they like to be with their people, or how does that go?
Like most dogs, German Shepherds are actually pack animals. They are not designed to be individuals that live isolated. So they are naturally going to be the most happy when they have their family or other companions around them. They do very well in multiple dog households where they have other dogs for companionship. And they really do enjoy having people being an active part of their life. They can adapt to people being gone to work for an 8-hour work day or a 10-hour work day, but that is a more difficult lifestyle for them and probably for their owners.
Yeah. And, I mean, are they an easy dog to fit into a family? You know, for example, is this a dog where, you know, you need to sort of think about placing, you know, in the dog's mind, placing him within that pack?
Well, Shepherds were a breed developed to work with people, and their primary task was to work herding sheep. Now, the way they herd sheep was to circle large flocks of sheep by continual trotting. This is why their movement is such a beautiful movement at the trot, because they can cover the ground effortlessly for hours at a time. But the way they interacted with their flock was to take care of them and not necessarily control them, but be relatively dominant presence against strangers and things like that. So when you get a dog that has sort of that history into a family, one of the things you have to realize is those characteristics are still part of that dog. He's still going to have an inborn desire to kind of circle his family. If you go on a walk, he often will walk around the whole group of people that are on a walk and circle them as if they were his small little flock. But I think what you were talking about was more how easily do they integrate into a family as far as their dominance goes.
Yeah.
When we look at families, what we usually say is that the dog needs to fit in a relatively low position in a family. And that also means that the type of puppy that you choose to go into that family is not going to be your most dominant dog. When I choose puppy people and when I match my puppies up to homes, I ask them many questions about their lifestyle, about how they raise their children and how active their children are, how interested their children are in working with the dog. Because if their children sit in front of a computer for 4 or 5 hours a day and have little interest or interaction with animals, the dog's not going to have any relationship with that child either. And so a breed like a Shepherd, which is very intelligent, is probably going to be quite likely to say, you don't mean much to me.
No.
And it won't necessarily be a bully towards that child, but they probably will have very little respect or reaction to that child trying to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They do especially well with very young children and babies. They view them as helpless, and they do not view them usually as prey. A lot of people worry that they're going to see them as a small, fast-moving object and, you know, treat it like a ball or that sort of thing that's going to wake those prey instincts up in them. But we generally do not see that in this breed. They seem to have that inborn shepherding trait that makes them want to protect the small and helpless rather than attack it.
Yeah. I have to say, my mother had a German Shepherd, and he was absolutely golden. He was a beautiful dog. And he had arthritis. And he was only about 9, but he did have very bad arthritis. And he hadn't been up the stairs for months. And I had my daughter, and she was only sort of a couple of weeks old, and it was the first time we'd taken her to the house. And we took her upstairs to change her nappy. And she was just making little whimpering sounds. And he dragged himself up the stairs to see, you know, what are you doing to this little person? Should I be, you know, helping this little person? And he was just so, as you say, he knew straight away.
That's right.
This is someone to look after.
And I've seen the same thing many times in my own dogs. One of my females was 8 years old when my first son was born. And he was born early and had some difficulties. So when he came home from the hospital, he still required some extra equipment at home and some extra care from us. And she had really not had a lot of exposure to children, but she did know what children were and babies. And when we brought this little child home, and laid him in his bed, in the bedroom, For the next 4 days, she lay beside him. She didn't want to go outside. She didn't want to eat. She just watched him and wanted to take care of him. You know, and the only time she would leave him is if he cried. She would come running to get me, and she would actually nose me in the back of my leg, saying, you know, go, you, hurry up, your baby's crying.
Oh, that's beautiful. Mm. And this this dog of my mother's, he was a big German Shepherd, and if you picked up something to throw for this for my mum's dog, he would be so excited and he'd jump up, and you know, you could be in danger of being knocked over. But we had a friend's daughter come round, and she was only about three, and she's trotting round, and she picked a twig up to throw for him. And we were all thinking, oh my goodness, he's going to knock her over. And he just looked at this small child and he sat down, because he thought, I can't play rough with you. You know, I'll just sit down. And they do seem to have this instinctive knowledge of who can play, you know, boisterously and who can't.
Yes, and certainly when people come to visit my dogs seem to target young athletic men as their primary playmates. So they figure, okay, those are the ones that can wrestle the best, so let's get them going.
Yes, yeah. Aww. We've said they are an intelligent breed, and they are incredibly versatile. But to get the best from your dog, obviously, you've got to put some effort in. What's the best training methods to use with a German Shepherd?
Well, in our day and age, we have a lot of enlightened knowledge about how dogs learn. And that has revolutionized our whole view on training. There are still our old trainers who like to train with methods, you know, from after the Second World War, which are generally quite harsh, with a lot of correction and force, and the dog only gets praised when they finally do the right thing. But we do know that we get a lot more out of our dogs when we motivate them to want to do stuff for us. And this would probably be for all breeds, not just German Shepherds. But I do find with the Shepherds, you have a dog who is naturally very willing to please. And yet, at the same time, dogs are selfish creatures. They do something because there's something in it for them. So if you look at training from the point of view of saying, I want to control my dog, and I'm going to tell him to do something, and I expect he's going to listen, I can tell you that your dog may do that, but he will never do it with as much enthusiasm and love and devotion as he's capable of. And so we use different motivators to teach our dogs the things that we want them to know. And a motivator can be many different things for many different dogs. But primarily we look at food, toys, and verbal or touching praise. Those are sort of our three categories that we would use in shaping a dog's behavior, in training him, and in bringing out the best that dog is able to give us.
Definitely, yeah. Is there much grooming with a Shepherd, and do they shed much?
Well, the answer to that one is yes, they are a shedding breed. People often talk about the hair bunnies or the dust bunnies that run around their houses if they have a German Shepherd. So people that have had a non-shedding breed or a very short-coated breed probably will be quite surprised when they have a German Shepherd. However, having said that, there are some bloodlines that have much more shedding than other ones. And that sounds kind of interesting, but we have Shepherds in many different parts of the world that have been raised for different purposes in different climates and different coat types. And when that happens, you get dogs from one area that may shed more than dogs from another area.
Mm.
So generally, most dogs will have two major sheds a year of both their inner coat and their outer coat. The shedding time will take about 3 weeks, and then they have totally regrown their new coat. During that time, they do need daily brushing pretty well to keep it under control, or grooming with a rake often will work very well, a grooming rake. And in between, they need very minimal grooming. Probably once a week or once every 2 weeks is sufficient to run through their coat quickly. Their coat doesn't tangle and it doesn't mat. With the exception of long-coated German Shepherds. They sometimes develop tangles behind their ears or if their skirts are really heavy.
And are there any health issues that, you know, if we're going to look for a German Shepherd puppy, what health tests do we need to be asking to see results of?
There are a few things that should be screened on breeding stock. Definitely we do screen the hips for hip dysplasia, and that requires x-rays done by a certified veterinarian, and the x-rays have to be read by a radiologist. That is pretty well a given in any medium-sized to large breed dog, and certainly German Shepherds being a popular breed, but also being a breed that has been plagued with hip dysplasia for many years, that's something you want to make sure has been checked on the parents. In addition to that, it is usually recommended that they have also had their elbows x-rayed to make sure the dogs do not have any genetic elbow dysplasia or elbow conditions going on. So those are the two main structural checks that should be done on the dog. German Shepherds also do have three or four different genetic eye conditions, and these also can be screened for and should be checked on every 1 to 2 years. So breeding stock, that should have been done on the dogs prior to being used for breeding and continue to be checked throughout their breeding career. Other than that, there is also a bleeding disorder called von Willebrand's disease. That is a blood test that has to be taken and sent to a laboratory for evaluation. The bleeding disorder can be fatal if it is severe, and there are certainly bloodlines of German Shepherds that the condition runs in. There's also many bloodlines that are clear of it now because we've known about that disease for a while and have been able to breed away from it or not breed into it anyways. So those would be probably the most main characteristics or things that would be screened for on breeding stock. In my own breeding program, I have a few additional conditions that I put on my dogs. When I look at breeding stock, I want to make sure that they don't have thyroid problems. An underactive thyroid is a medical condition that needs lifelong treatment, and we do know that if you breed dogs that are hypothyroid, you're going to produce more puppies that have that. And that means your pet puppies that people are buying as healthy dogs are probably going to require medication by the time they're 3 or 4 years old and for the remainder of their life. And because we know that that is genetically passed on from our parent, from the parents, we don't want to breed dogs that have hypothyroidism or a family history of it. So that's one of the things I also add to my breeding program. And the other thing that I add to my breeding program is a requirement that my dogs do not have allergies. Allergies are a very complex problem, and we know that environment and food and stress play a huge role in the development and the treatment of allergies. However, there is definitely a genetic predisposition that is passed on from the lineage of the dog as to whether they're going to develop allergies or not. But because the breed is so popular, we also do see other health conditions quite commonly in German Shepherd, and they can also be ruled out, obviously, in breeding stock. And that would be things like your pancreatic insufficiency, where they can't digest their food properly, heart problems, certain types of cancer that we do know run in families of dogs. Those sort of things would most breeders would probably try to avoid or not use those dogs in their breeding program.
What would be the best piece of advice that you could give to someone who is looking for a German Shepherd?
Well, if they're simply looking for one, I would say make sure that you have the time and energy and devotion for the next 12 to 14 years of that dog's life and that you're not making a short-term commitment. So that would be one of the primary things. Remembering that they are a high-energy dog, they are not suitable to somebody who is very low energy and doesn't spend a lot of time exercising or being active. So what happens in many of the times when we see dogs that need rescuing is the dog is not suitable to the home that the dog is in. And so that's where people need to take enough time to plan for a dog and think about what breed is really truly suitable to them. And then secondarily to that is making sure you do your research really well into the breeder that you want to go with. There are different types of German Shepherds within the same breed. We have some breeders that breed primarily for show purposes, where they're looking at the conformation of the dog's movement, and the way the dog displays, you know, his outward beauty. Then you have a separate category of people who are basically breeding for the dog's working ability. they may like a pretty dog, but by far more important to them is the dog's stable temperament, stable health, and the dog's ability to perform in various aspects of work, being tracking, obedience, protection work, agility, that type of thing. So even when you choose the German Shepherd, you also need to choose what type of German Shepherd you like, from what kind of background, what is the emphasis the breeder is putting on into their bloodlines, because a show Shepherd is going to be very different than a working German Shepherd.
Well, if that's piqued your interest and you'd like to find out more, there's a link to Robin's website on the Dogcast site.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. So, how many of you listeners have had to contend with the request, "Can I have a dog?"
I think even though people are getting more sensible about dogs as Christmas presents, there will be many children out there asking their parents for one.
Well, in Alta, Utah, USA, it's the adult residents of the town who bombard their mayor with the request. In an effort to preserve the beauty and quality of Alta, there are only 42 dog licenses available. So hackles rise and competition is fierce. Among the human population, of course. The dogs take it in their stride, but not so the mayor, Tom Pollard, who has the power to grant extra licenses in special circumstances, and comes under considerable pressure to do so. The town's policy has caused controversy, and may not even be legal, but for the moment the scramble to grab one of those limited licenses continues.
Here at Dogcast we think the restrictions should be thrown out. What more beautiful a sight could there be than dogs and people enjoying life together? So, we say the more dogs, the merrier. And in Buffalo, New York, there is a dog who clearly has no limit on the number of puppies she can care for. A bitch who already has 8 puppies of her own has become a foster mum, welcoming a dozen more orphaned pups into her family.
This is no mean feat, bearing in mind the 12 pups in question are Newfoundlands. So far, mother and all her puppies are doing well, with a little help from their human family. And talking of big dogs, how big a dog do you think could manage to go unnoticed in your average airport?
Oh, Chihuahua? Jack Russell? Maybe a Cocker Spaniel?
Well, at Memphis International Airport, a dog escaped from his shipping crate and stayed on the loose for almost 3 weeks. And the dog we're talking about here is a Great Dane.
Wow. And finally, from a big dog reluctant to fly to another that seems to have the urge to tour the United States. A rat terrier called Daisy, who disappeared in Colorado 7 months ago, has been found in Tennessee, over 1,000 miles away. Daisy was spotted on Christmas night, and after contact was made with her owner, Daisy was lucky enough to get a free flight home. Apparently, the reunion between Daisy and her owner when she touched down at the airport was very moving.
And on that happy note, that's all from us at the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
Dogcast listener Renu Engelhart has sent us a question.
Hi, my name is Renu Engelhart. I'm from Rhode Island in the States. I have a suggestion for our segment. Recently, one of our dogs, Gracie, who's a Basset Hound Lab mix, was diagnosed with a ruptured knee, and she will need a very expensive operation. As a parent with 3 children, 2 dogs, cats, and guinea pigs, how do other families manage when an expensive dog issue comes up? Gracie's going to have the operation, but it's very financially draining on us, and we'll have to stop some family stuff that we do. And we were curious as to how other families deal, and at what price do you say too much is too much? Thanks, bye.
Well, it's a difficult area. If any of you have any good ideas for helping to cope with paying for expensive treatment for your dog, please do let us know. We'll include them in the show and pass them on to Renu. My daughter recently asked me, if I could choose to give a dog understanding of just one human concept, what would it be? I immediately knew, and even after considering the matter, I can't think of anything else I would rather my dogs really understood. And it's just a simple thing, really. Sorry. I wish that when I accidentally stand on a paw or inadvertently drop something that lands just where the dog is lying, or even make a noise that startles them, I really wish that I could convey that it was an accident and not intentional. Of course, I make a fuss of the dog in any of those circumstances, and they're always eager to be friends again. But I wish they understood I didn't deliberately cause any harm. What would you give your dog understanding of? Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What kind of a dog chases anything red? A bulldog.